It is the CB Sports Network Rewind Show for you this morning here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. Casey Miners, Jeff Mason, Jesus. It's been that morning. Jeff Blankman and Mason Nealon with us in the studio ahead of what we got all going on. A full day today, I feel like, of baseball and softball talk. And we got an interview coming up later on here in the show this morning. And guys, good Tuesday. We had some really good softball last night. Expect some good matchups tonight. We'll talk about those coming up later on in the hour, but everything that we talk about, it seems like it's in full swing. We've only been in full swing for a couple of weeks now, but if you look at it, the season's already about halfway over.
Yeah, it is. Postseason starts July the 6th, I think it is. So we're pretty much this week, and then you get next week as a full week, and then pretty much the week after that. So there's only two more full weeks after this, and we're into the postseason. That's how fast the summer season goes. But yeah, last night, honestly, I think Mason, with the two doubleheaders that we had with Carroll and Kemper both playing baseball and softball doubleheaders, I almost think the last night one might have been one of the busiest nights for total number of games. That we had last night.
Yeah, honestly, you know, we've had a couple of nights where it's been full schedules, but one of you and I is probably not out broadcasting, so part of it gets done kind of earlier there when it comes to typing and, like, looking at it, so it doesn't feel as long. But last night with the two doubleheaders and, you know, Kemper being on the road, so them having to come home, and then we kind of do that there. So it did feel pretty long, but you know what? It wasn't terrible, and honestly, some good baseball and softball played last night.
Yeah, very good. We'll talk about that a little more as we delve into it later on. I did want to say, as I'm looking over at the calendar, we're looking at July the 16th for our Rewind All-Star festivities. We haven't solidified that date yet, but we'll try to get that done maybe today or tomorrow. But it's a Thursday evening. We haven't ever done it on a Thursday, but we know that it's right after the postseason ends and before the state tournament, so we know there's going to be some families that will be leaving right about that time for vacation ahead of the state tournaments, and then you'll get the vacations after the state tournament. So we're going to try and hold it on a weeknight to get it in maybe before some of the families leave, and that give the kids an opportunity to maybe be able to come and partake. And we'll announce probably right after the 4th of July, that weekend, we'll announce the kids, not what teams, of course, they're on, but the kids and coaches that will be invited to our event. So, yeah, when you say that we're getting close to the end of the regular season, we're having to finalize all of our Rewind information as well.
And then it'll be football and volleyball and cross-country season, tennis, before we know it.
Yeah.
Coming up already in the fall. Hard to believe.
You were saying yesterday that you wish fall was here.
I'm excited for football season, not just for locally, but college and NFL. And I'm to that point of the season where the Cubs aren't playing very good right now, so I'm like, what do I got to look forward to? So I might as well just wait for football season to get here. And plus, Mason, you play video games, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the new college football game comes out in July, so I'm just kind of waiting for that, too. So okay.
Okay, well, that's just a couple of weeks away.
Oh,
you don't have – I'm not ready for fall yet. I love football and volleyball and cross-country and tennis season, but I'm not ready for fall quite yet. So let me enjoy summer before we get into fall.
I'm just happy that the greatest player of all time is on the cover of Madden, so I might buy Madden this year.
No, Caleb Williams is on the cover of Madden this year.
Okay, so. I was trying to figure out, don't they have him doing his jump touchdown pass
the
or
one
whatever?
That I think it was the 4th-and-8 play against Green Bay where he threw like a jump pass on his off shoulder over the defense, and I think we ended up winning that game or something. I can't remember.
Still one of the greatest postseason games I've ever watched.
Yeah, that brought tears to my eyes, honestly. I'm like, the last time the Bears were good was the year I was born, and I'm like, they made the Super Bowl, and then they went on this run this year, and I'm like, oh, God, this is great. And then we end up losing to the Rams. So I'm like, well, chalk it up. We'll see next year.
Get used to that. You'll probably lose to them again, right?
Miles Garrett.
Miles Garrett there now, and then what's his name's coming out of retirement from everything I'm hearing.
There's been reports that Aaron Donald's going to come out, but that ain't going to happen.
You don't think so?
I will stop watching the NFL, at least Rams games, if Aaron Donald and Miles Garrett are on the same line.
That would be the scariest defensive line of all time.
They had Ndamukong Suh and Donald a couple of years ago.
But Sue was past his prime.
Yeah, he was, but he was still good.
He wasn't Aaron Donald good.
Well, but who knows how good Aaron Donald would be.
He wasn't out stepping on people's heads with his cleats. Surprised. Did he didn't do anything like that at Nebraska, did he?
No, he just picked people up, threw them around. Yeah, like they were, you know, he threw your quarterback around, Colt McCoy. Yes.
Yeah, so. I still ended up winning that game, though.
Yeah, only because the officials wanted you guys in the Big 12 champion or in the national championship game. That's why.
Say what you want to say. Say what you want to say, but it's okay. We have got an interview coming up late in just a little bit, guys. We'll talk about it here in a minute. Porter Snyder with the Cash shooting team, I believe, here in town. Got the chance. Are they going to a national event, aren't they? They qualified for one of those, believe correctly.
Yeah, and I don't know where it's at. Nathan Cohn's our news director, who is going to be the guy you're going to hear interviewing. Porter did a news story on it, and I know it aired yesterday, so it is available on the website, and he'll have all the details in that. But Porter ended up being, I think I wrote it down right, the rimfire rifle champion. I grew up hunting, but I never got involved because we didn't offer this type of stuff when I was growing up, so couldn't tell you exactly what that is and what the competition was. I know that they have to fire real quick, and it's all based off of time. Nathan will discuss it with Porter in the interview, and they'll explain it probably better than I can. That's part of the reason why we let Nathan do the interview and stuff. So, but Nathan got a chance to catch up with him. I think it was either late last week or early this week. But congratulations goes out to Porter. We thought it was something pretty cool. We wanted to make sure that our Rewind listeners got a chance to listen to maybe one of the high school kids that, we don't always get a chance to talk about and promote a little bit of a sport that probably doesn't always get talked about on here.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have that interview coming up for you after the break here on KCIM.
Hi, this is Leah Lechtenberg. I am a speech-language pathologist at St. Anthony Regional Hospital in Carroll. I just want to take a minute and let you know about the great services the Speech Therapy Department offers. We provide services for speech, language, cognition, voice, swallowing, and much more for patients ranging in age from 2 to 102 years old. Whether it be a young child who just doesn't seem to be talking or an adult who is recovering from a stroke, we are here to provide you with quality services. We are able to provide our patients with the most current therapy approaches and technology available. Here at St. Anthony's Speech Therapy Department, we want to help you make improvements, reach your goals, and get back to life. The St. Anthony Rehab Department offers the best in rehabilitation services. To learn more, please contact St. Anthony Rehabilitation Services. The results you want and the care you deserve.
Welcome back to KCIM's Sports Rewind. I'm Nathan Cohns, kind of making a rare appearance on the show here, but I've got a very interesting guest joining us this morning. It is Porter Snyder, who is the state champion with the Scholastic Action Shooting Sports Program, part of the CAS team. For starters, Porter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we're going to start at level -5. We're not even starting at level 0 because a lot of folks might not even be familiar with SASP as a program and what it actually is. So I guess for starters, tell me a little bit about the Scholastic Action Shooting Sports. It's a mouthful there. And what it does, what it means, and what it means to you.
So there's really no easy way to explain it. So I'm going to start by somewhat comparing it to trap shooting. It is nothing like trap shooting because most people understand trap shooting. SAS, we have 5 targets, and our goal is to hit 5 of those targets as quick as we can with the shortest amount of time. Now, that sounds easy, but all these targets can be arranged in different orders, they can have different shapes, and then we have one unique target called the stop target that ends our shooting.
So like when you're shooting, like when you say fast, I think that depends a lot on who you're asking. 5 targets in what, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, how fast?
So I personally shoot with an iron rifle, and depending on the course, I can shoot between 2 seconds to a second and a half. But it really depends on who's shooting and how much experience they have. And we definitely are not moving when we're shooting. That is the last thing we want to do because we care about safety because we are handling guns.
And I think that's a good part. I'm glad you mentioned that. So I think it's really impressed upon by the program. These are high school kids, middle school kids. I think the youngest age is 10 or 11, right? In that range. So these are, relatively younger kids. You've been in the program since that age, right?
Yep.
And so safety is impressed upon them from the get-go.
100%, because we don't want any accidents, and safety is 100% their main focus because it's the most important aspect to shooting. If you can't shoot safe, then there's no point in even shooting. So it's pretty much the main concept that is taught throughout cast shooting. But once you get past the safety and learn all the aspects to safety, then we get into the shooting.
And so to step back, you made a comment. You shoot iron rifle. For those who maybe aren't familiar with the different types of categories and classifications of how they shoot, how do they break things down in terms of classes and competition?
So first off, we shoot 22 rifles and 22 pistols, which that is the main broken up. But then those sections are broken up in between iron sights and then optic sights. You have a pistol with iron sights, you have a pistol with optic sights, you have a rifle with iron sights, and you have a rifle with optic sights. And then those are the main categories that our team shoots, but depending on the team, I believe they can also shoot 9/11, but our team specifically doesn't shoot that. And we mainly shoot Volkhortzen's firearms made here in Carroll, which is also very interesting.
Yeah, so it's pretty neat. They do a lot of stuff with your guys' program. I thought it was really cool. You guys do local meets. You do virtual meets as well, where, you know, sometimes you're at the same range with the team you're competing against, and other times they're on the other side of the state or even in a different state, and you're just comparing your scores. It's maybe an odd comparison, but I think of it a lot like golf, where, yeah, you might be comparing scores with other competitors, but really you're trying to compete against yourself, really.
Yeah, that is a great way to phrase it, because you can't really see what your opponents are doing. All you have to base off how good you are is yourself. And that is more of an aspect that pushes you into becoming a better person and improving everything that you can do with shooting.
Yeah, so don't be too humble when I ask you this question. I don't think a lot of people understand how fast shooting a 5-target string is when you're between 1.5 and 2.5 seconds, just how quick that motion is. Talk about the speed that's involved there.
Well, it's a little challenging to talk about the speed, but I'll try my best. I'll start with the starting position. You have a cone in front of you, and you have your gun pointed towards the cone because we don't draw guns out of like holsters and stuff. So we already have our point where we have our rifle, and then we wait for this specific random beep. And once we hear that beep, we're off. We go to our first target, then we just continue on until we hit the stop plate. And during that point, when I shoot, it doesn't feel like 2 seconds. I always feel like it feels a little longer, but I think adrenaline is helping me push myself a bit more. But more or less, I get up to the target, I line up my first shot, I take my first shot, and once I have that first shot, I more or less just swing my arms to each plate, shoot it. I don't even understand it because my brain doesn't think to shoot. My hands just do it, and then it's over.
Yeah, so a lot of muscle memory, it sounds like.
Yes, a lot of muscle memory.
And so when you get down to the levels of competition, I mean, this goes all the way up to, there's internationals. They don't call it the Scholastic Action Shooting Sport. They call it Steel Challenge at the professional level. But you competed at the State Challenge, I believe, end of May is when that was. Yeah, and so that's where you took the title. So talk a little bit about the class that you shot for that.
So the three guns I shot was iron rifle, optic rifle, and iron pistol. I am really good at the rifles. Pistol is another story, but we don't have to talk about that. So I like shooting the rifles the most. And my iron rifle score added up on the 4 stages that we shot was the best in the state.
And so we're talking here as an individual. So you're the individual champion in the men's class for that particular category of gun. But it's also a team competition as well, where you have groups of students competing against other groups of students from out of the state. So talk a little bit about the team aspect of the sport.
So the team aspect, more or less, is you have 4 people on a squad. And those 4 people shoot 4 courses of different setups for plates. And then once those times are done, they're all put together to create a total team score. And then that total team score is taken and then compared to other teams.
Let's change gears a little bit. So you guys have historically performed quite well at state, but that's not the end of the competition. There's a national competition that you guys go to in the summer each year. That's out in Ohio, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Yes, it is. Throughout all the years, we've had individuals on our teams, groups on our teams go up to nationals. It's been a while since I've been to nationals, but I'm going this year, and I'm super excited to see what it's like. Last time I went, it might have been maybe after COVID, but it's definitely been a while for me, but I am ready to shoot nationals, and it's going to be amazing.
What are your expectations? I mean, like, did you, was this a personal best for you at state, or do you have some pretty high goals for nationals?
I want to have high goals for nationals because I want to push myself and be better. So, and I know there's going to be a lot of competition because it's everyone in the state. So that's putting a little pressure on me, but I'm ready to try my best and shoot the best that I can.
And so we're going to wrap things up here, but if, you know, this is a sport maybe you're hearing about for the first time, talking about you, the listener here, how might someone get, you know, their child involved in the sport?
So here in Carroll, we have a program called CAS. That's what I shoot in. And right now, they have a waiting list. But more or less, if you go contact some people there on the Facebook, Carroll Action Shooting Sports, you could be able to message coaches and see. And our goal with that is to have enough coaches for more students. And we're always trying to grow. But we are a private organization. So it is a little difficult to grow more and more and add more people onto the team.
Yeah, so it's always a challenge. You're balancing how many athletes, if you want to use that language, or shooters you have versus, you know, having enough responsible adults to keep an eye on you, your shenanigans that you get up to, I'm sure. So Porter, we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you for your time and stepping in with us.
Thank you for having me.
She needs an adult in her life to hang out with or go to the movies with. But it's not about the activity. It's about having a mentor. Someone who shows up, listens, and shares a laugh. Someone like you. There are kids in your community who want guidance from someone who cares. If you believe in the value of giving back, become a mentor. A message from Iowa HHS and your local provider.
Why be at the forefront of childhood cancer research? At St. Jude, we do it because every innovation we make is a moment we give to children with cancer everywhere. But we can't do it without you. Help St. Jude give children with cancer more moments. Moments that can last a lifetime. Learn more at stjude.org.
This week at your Carroll Hy-Vee, stock up and save. Grab Pepsi 12 packs for just $5.99 each when you buy three. And Frito-Lay chips are only $1.99 each when you purchase three. Plus Jack's Pizza's just $2.98. Stop by Hy-Vee and save all week long. We are back with the CB Sports Network Rewind Show here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. I'll get it right this time. Jeff Blankman, Mason Nealon, Casey Miners in studio with you, talking local sports. And
our house band Bad Authority leading us back in. Miss those guys.
As they do every week. And you play them on the preview show streak football season, too.
Yep, absolutely. Do you ever throw them in? Does anybody ever throw them into the scoreboard show on Friday nights in the fall?
I don't know if they're in the rotator.
I think they are in the rotator, but it's like, I think there's like five or six songs in there, so they get played maybe once an evening.
Okay.
It's been a couple of years since I sat down and did it consistently, so I can't remember fully.
Local sports going on tonight. We're going to talk NBA Finals though a little bit here, and a lot of people, I think, surprised, maybe not surprised at the Knicks one, but I think if you ask anybody, the Spurs were the favorite going into that series. And what was it? I saw something that the Knicks trailed for like majority of those games until late. And to come back and just win those games, I mean, credit to the Knicks and winning that finals.
Yeah, and I talked to Mason about it Saturday when we were sitting out at the Carroll Baseball invite that, you know, I think that part of it for New York, even though they only had, one guy that had been in the NBA Finals and stuff, they had older guys. So they had guys that were more mature. They had guys that maybe understood how to handle late-game situations. And not that the Spurs hadn't had that, but, you know, as I told him, you're much more mature when you're 27 than you are when you're 20 or 21. And you know, and you're more mature when you're 40 than you are when you're 27. And I think the age of the Knicks, and I think maybe the Knicks were just better than everybody wanted to give them credit for. I can't tell you that I had time to sit down and watch any of the games, but it just sounded like the Knicks were the team that made plays late in the game, and that's where I look at it from somebody looking at it from the outside, that maturity maybe had something to do with that.
was Brunson the only one that's been to a finals? Because was he on the finals? Was he with the Mavs
when
they
won? No, it wasn't him.
It was OG Anunoby was in the finals. Because he was with the Raptors when they won the title. But yeah.
Brunson, he made some key plays.
Yeah, I was going to say, none of those guys. I mean, Carl Anthony Towns spent all those years in Minnesota when they were not very good. Brunson was in Dallas before they were good. And then I think the year after he left was the year they went to the finals. But if I'm a Spurs fan, you kind of look to the future and you go, we're screwed when it comes to the point guard position because we're paying De'Aaron Fox like $60 million a year to suck in the playoffs. And we have a young point guard in Dylan Harper who's like the future of your franchise with Victor Wembanyama. And you don't know what to do because you're like, we start him, but then we have $60 million rotting away on the bench.
Oh, they'll trade him.
Yep. The only bad thing, though, is I saw through like some of the reports that I was looking at and some podcasters that do NBA stuff is just like $60 million played terrible in the postseason. How do you get him off without losing all of your draft capital? Because they're like, what team's going to want De'Aaron Fox for 3 years, $60 million a year if you're not going to give up two first-round picks? So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll have to swallow, I'm sure, some of his contract to get rid of him. You know, and what was this, his first playoff run, too? So maybe
it might have been.
Yeah, so maybe he'll learn a little bit. But, I think if you're the Spurs, you got to be disappointed because even when they were down 3-1, I'm like, you know, they could have swept that series if they would make a play late, you know, and they just didn't know how to make plays late. But that'll be a learning experience. Most teams, if you look back over the history, you don't lose in the NBA finals to learn. You end up getting beat, you know, like in the, you know, conference finals or something like that. And then, you take your growing steps there. And for this San Antonio team, they just happen to be able to – they're a horrible matchup, I think, for Oklahoma City. And they were able to get past them, and then they had to learn their learning lessons in front of everybody in the NBA finals instead of losing in the conference finals to kind of have that grow up type of a season. So
I see something that this was like one of the most watched finals in NBA history.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, you've got some great players, and New York was involved first time, since 1998, I think they were in the finals, and they win their first NBA championship since 73. So, yeah, it's interesting. People say that the NBA is dying. It's not. It's still really popular. You know, they're selling out arenas, breaking, you know, records for the amount of people that are going to games the last how many years. The TV ratings may be down, but if you look at add in all the streaming and all of that type of stuff, it's they're doing fine. The NBA is doing just fine, and now they've got a whole new batch of young, great players that they're going to be able to build around hopefully, Victor Wembanyama is going to probably be one of those, but hopefully he takes this as a learning lesson. I got to ask, because like I said, didn't get to watch any of the games. I certainly watched highlights every night. A lot of rumors that he's a little dirty. How much truth is there to the fact that maybe he needs to quit being a dirty guy that's maybe out there trying to injure people at times?
There's plays that look questionable. I mean, he's taken some swings at guys. And I mean, I know in the Timberwolves series, he got a flagrant one for kind of turning the corner on a guy and hitting him with his elbow. But I think in his mind, he's just playing physical. But when you watch it, it's like, yeah, that's a little crossing the line. And you worry about that sometimes with those foreign players because the rule is different for their league when they grow up and then the NBA. So you see a little bit of that crossover sometimes. But I don't know if he's intending it to be dirty or if it's just, you know, it just kind of naturally happens.
Yeah, because he's not the only foreign player, but the foreign players right now are dominating the league. For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. The best players in the NBA, I would say probably, 7 to 8 out of the top 10 players in the league are foreign-born players, which tells me that all the youth organizations and all the club travel teams and all the things that we've got going on in this country, maybe not doing things the right way. I'm not saying that they're not putting out some great players, but you question whether or not they're doing things the right way when foreign-born players are coming in here and taking over basketball in this country. So
yeah, and I mean, I think it's been 8 years since an American player has won the MVP because Giannis won it back-to-back in 19 and 20. And then Jokic won it back-to-back and then won a third one. And then SGA's won two. And SGA's from Canada. So I'm like, if you look at the top five players in the NBA, I mean.
What Brunson had? Brunson won MVP, didn't he?
No, he won finals MVP.
Yeah.
But we're talking league MVP for the season.
Because I mean, in my mind, if you look at the top five players in the NBA, Jokic, Giannis, Wemby, SGA, and then whoever you want to put at five. So I'm like, at least four of the five best players in the NBA are all born outside of America.
I think it was Embiid that won the other one that you were talking about during that stretch. And if Embiid would have stayed healthy, he'd probably be in that list of probably one of the five best players in the league. But his body's probably beginning to break down. But, you know, that's kind of the scary thing. You got Doncic, you know, with the Lakers and – you know, the best players in the league now are not guys that were born and raised in the United States. So,
no, I agree. We'll step away. We'll take a break. We'll come back, talk about some high school sports here on KCIM Sports Rewind.
Teachers, thank you for another incredible year. Your dedication, patience, and passion make a lasting impact every day. And for all your classroom essentials, supplies, and organization needs, shop Stone Printing and Office Supply in Carroll, supporting teachers and schools all year long. Looking for a smarter way to clean? Stop into Rutten's Vacuum Center in Carroll this June and test drive the new Recar R70 Smart Mop. It vacuums and mops at the same time. And when you try it in store, you'll be registered to win one of your own. Rutten's Vacuum Center, Highway 30 West in Carroll, or shop anytime at shopiowa.com.
We are back with the CB Sports Network Rewind Show here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM at KCIM. Casey Miners, Jeff Blankman, Mason Nealon in studio with you guys. And we hinted on it a little bit earlier that it's getting down to the end of the baseball and softball season already. And we've got some teams playing really good right now. And we talked about, I want to mention something. We've got a big softball game tonight, not on the air, but Exira going to Riverside for a really big matchup just because Riverside last night knocked off Loma.
I was just going to say that. I looked in Riverside, number 10, knocked off number 5, Loma. And the funny thing for Exira is, for some reason, you look at their schedule and you'll go, okay, they got Tri-Center to start the week. Ooh, Riverside on Tuesday. Oh, Loma on Thursday. It's like they kind of put those games in that slot, and I'm like, yeah, there's weeks where these girls are going to come out battered and bruised, but, you know, if you can get through the week with just one loss, maybe, I mean, if you give up a loss to a Riverside or a Loma, it's not going to kill you, but, you know, those girls, I mean, you watch them down there, they're legit. I saw them at the start of the year, and I've seen them, you know, at media days and stuff like that. They're a legit contender to make a run at state.
So they're a team that I don't want to see, especially if they can get Riley some minutes. Like, right. I'm not shocked that they throw her tonight and tomorrow. But I mean, Taryn
started last night, but she hasn't thrown a ton this year. And I think that's probably impacted her a little bit. But they've got a great 1-2 punch in the circle, and it's led, of course, by Riley, our two-time defending, you know, Rewind player of the year, certainly probably a candidate again this year. We haven't discussed anything, but you would think that as the two-time player of the year defending that she's probably going to be in that discussion again. But, you know, if they continue to hit the ball, I think that's been the biggest thing for them as of late. I know last night they kind of struggled to hit against a pretty good pitcher from Tri-Center. But the nice thing about being in that league this year, you've got four really dynamite teams.
Oh, yeah.
That are kind of chewing each other up. And the really nice thing about it is, with their two late losses to Missouri Valley and Loma already this year and losing both of those in the seventh, they started the year ranked third and haven't really fallen. They're sitting at fourth right now, and they're sitting, 10-2 on the year. So, you know, those kind of losses haven't hurt them. Hopefully they can get through this week. Hopefully last night, I'm not going to say a wake-up call, but hopefully it was the struggle game maybe of the week. I don't think they're going to go out and put 15, 16 hits and 15, 16 runs on Riverside tonight, but they're going to have to put the ball in play it and get some hits, that's for sure.
And I think Riverside really looking for a get-back game too, because they lost to Exira. And if I didn't look at the full schedules, but, you know, Riverside beats Loma, Loma beats Audubon, Exira, Corn Kimbleton, Audubon, and then the Spartans beat Riverside.
Yes.
So all out of the three teams besides Missouri Valley, who's won like 14 in a row, have beat each other. And so the race for second place, unless Missouri Valley slips up, is going to be a tight race. And I mentioned it last week too. If I'm Exira, Elkhorn, Kimbleton, Audubon, I am happy that Missouri Valley, Loma, and Riverside are in Class 2A when it comes postseason time.
Yes. Yeah. I think they're going to be really prepped and primed.
Oh, they should be.
Yep. And you know, I got a chance to watch a good Newell Fonda team last night that's ranked just behind them at number six, and they're good. But what I've
they'll
seen.
They'll play later in the year.
Yep. What I've seen, and those two do match up, as you said, later in the year. What I've seen from Exarokrin, Kimbledon, Audubon at this point, just the one matchup for Newell, is I would give an advantage to the Spartans right now in that matchup. Now, that doesn't mean that they win that night that they play, or they win if they match up in the postseason, but, you know, just in from what I've seen from one night in Newell Fonda and a couple of nights of the Spartans this year, that I would give, you know, Exarokrin, Kimbledon, Audubon the advantage in that game. And that's rare that you can ever say that, you know, you give, you know, a team in our area an advantage over Newell Fonda, because our teams tend to struggle against them guys. But, yeah, you know, they're going to be ready, and I don't know if there's anybody else in this part of the state in 1A that's
as ready as they will be.
That's going to be as strong as what they are.
So. I also want to mention, Kemper went out to Atlantic last night in softball and stuck with a very good Atlantic team. Yeah, you're probably playing, despite the losses, some of their better softball this season. I think, what, lost 5-2 and then like 11-8 or something like that last night in those losses. But Kemper looked really good, starting to play, I think, a lot better after a really rough portion to start the season.
Yeah, the defense has come on a little bit. I think that, you know, they've kind of figured out the three-headed pitching situation they have with Aubrey Cardiel and Charlotte Schwabe and now, you know, Addison Schoen kind of getting in there. And I think she's rounding into pitching shape. And what I mean by that is that she's throwing more. And when you throw more, you become more accurate. You become just a little bit better. And I think she's starting to kind of get into the right zone for them. They've hit the ball really well
all year long.
So it's never been the hitting situation for them. But defensively, I think they've struggled at times. They've struggled at times in the circle, and that's all starting to come together. Now they've lost three in a row, but two of those to Atlantic last night. They had been on a five-game winning streak prior to that. So they're a team that's really coming on, and they're going to be a tough out, I think, come postseason time.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, I watched him play. I wish I could have seen him play on Saturday, because I think Glidden's a really solid softball team. So I'm like, if I would have seen them play against Glidden, would have given me a little bit more kind of a look at them, because I know I saw him against Lewis Central, against Red Oak, and I'm like, we don't cover Lewis Central and Red Oak enough for me to know how good those
Red
teams
Oaks,
truly are.
Sorry to say this, they're not very good. Yeah, so the Red Oaks, yeah, that's a tough one to judge anybody by. They're a team that's struggling right now.
So. Yeah, and so that's one I wanted to look at, but I'm like, for the Kemper girls, you know, you start, I think, what, 2-7 or something, or 2-8, and you win five straight to kind of even it up there. So, you know, not a bad middle part of the season here. It's just kind of how you close. And I kind of want to talk about Exira one more time here when it comes to their season. For me, when it comes to the postseason for them, I think you're obviously going to know what you're going to get from Taryn Peterson batting. You know what you're going to get fielding. You know what you're going to get from Riley Miller. You know what you're going to get from some of these girls. But somebody else is going to have to kind of step up as well, whether that's, you know, Abby Wanser, Anna Larson, Zoe Rasmussen, Briley Peterson. Somebody is going to have some big nights for them, because, you know, you can only rely on Taryn and Riley so much sometimes. You know, everyone's got to contribute, and they've done a nice job of that to start the year.
They have, and I think Briley hits the ball well. Anna Larson, if you look at her average, it's been really strong all season long. Abby's starting to come on. I chatted with her before their IKM Manning game last week, and she's been putting a lot of time in the cage and a lot of time with the tee and working on things, and she had a big night that night, and then she had a big night last night, I think, at the plate as well. So she's starting to come on. Jordan Mulford swinging pretty well for him at the bottom of the order, giving him that number nine. So, yeah, I think the offense is starting to come. I know that's one of the things that Tom's really been, every time we do a weekly interview with him, when I talked to him before the IKM Manning game the other night, it's all been about getting the swings corrected and getting the bat on the ball, and they'll get that done. But you're right, you know, Taryn's elite. I said to Tom off record yesterday, and I'll just tell everybody part of the conversation. You guys give me a hard time sometimes because I always get to all the game sites extremely early. I'm an hour to an hour and a half before I start broadcasting. And if it's a JV doubleheader, or a JV than a varsity game, a lot of times I'm there before 5:30, before the JV game even starts, because I like being able to set up. I like watching the younger kids because I'm learning who I might be covering, you know, in the next few years of the varsity. But I like watching teams go through warm-ups, and I don't know if we have a more natural, athletic player in the area than Taryn. You watch her with the way she slides across the bag when they're doing the double play stuff, you know, when they flip it to her and stuff, and the way she slides across the bag and throws, you know, even Tom's like, that's not something I taught her. That's just natural, mm-hmm. knowing how to do things, understanding. I think she grew up watching her brothers play baseball, you know, and stuff. And she's pretty darn elite. I know she's going to probably go on to play college basketball because that's her passion. But she could be a college softball player somewhere as well.
She could play college volleyball, too, if she wanted.
She could, absolutely. Probably could run track if she really put her mind to it as well. But she's awfully special. And then you throw, you know, Riley into that mix. They've got a 1-2 punch that it's hard for anybody in this area, maybe hard for many teams in the state to match the 1-2 punch that they have with those two.
And kind of talking about 1-2 punches, you know, I talked to Coach John Waddle to kind of look at baseball here as well, and we talk about 1-2 punches, and I talked about, you know, come postseason time, what's this going to look like? And he goes, Ty Hayden's probably one of the best pitchers in this area. I mean, hitting 90 almost every night now, and, you know, then they're starting to slowly work up Cal Hayden. And I go, what's going to happen if you're a team that runs into Coon Rapids Barrett in the sub-state final, if and when they get there, and you start against Ty for 5 innings, and the final 2 innings you go, all right, we got a Hayden kid off the mound. Who do we got next? And you see 24 and Red walk out there. I'm like, there's not many teams that can play with that level of pitching. So for them, and I mean, sitting at 15-1, number one team in the entire state for Class 1A, they're going to be dangerous coming up soon.
They are. And as Cal gets rounded into shape on the hill and can start to throw a little bit more, they're going to become even tougher. That's a special group this year. I still say the one thing that they're going to have to do is probably consistently get more production up and down the lineup. Yep. There are times where they struggle a little bit in the bottom part of the lineup, so they're going to have to consistently, because they're going to run into a team at some point, might be a sub-state game, might be somewhere in the state tournament, that's going to possibly match them or come close enough to matching them on the hill. They might have just a one guy instead of a two, but that one guy might be able to go out and really control, you know, and stuff. So somebody down at the bottom part of the order. Max Sherbin hit a big home run for him the other day in that, you know, in the Carroll tournament against Seidel. So you're getting some production down in that bottom part. It's just got to become consistent.
And I'll say this too, not that a knock on Cal and Ty, but you are going to find teams in the state tournament that 1-9, they're going to hit.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, you know, that their 79 are still going to be 300 hitters. You're going to find teams like that are going to hit. So to have the consistent pitching that they do is great, but you're going to give up some runs potentially when you have lineups like that. So if they could get more, they're going to need more run production potentially when it comes to those games.
And I'm really interested in Saturday. They host South Winneshiek, who is undefeated going into last night. I didn't look to see how they did last night, but undefeated. They've jumped up to number 5, so you're going to have potentially number one. Well, you will have number one against number 5 down in Coon on Saturday morning. We're planning on going down and doing a live video broadcast of that game on Saturday morning. So you'll be able to watch it on our YouTube channel and stuff. So, but that one, I think, I mean, they knocked off number one Pleasantville in 2A. They battled right with Seidel, who was ranked in 3A over the weekend. This is a really, really special group of Coon players and team right now. Mm-hmm. But we're going to learn even more about them, I think, on Saturday against South Winneshiek.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I wouldn't be surprised if John saves his two kids, if he saves Ty and Cal for that game. How big of a matchup it could potentially be. And especially,
going to have to look at the conference schedule, though, this week and figure out who they all have, because he wants to win the conference, too. So,
And right now, Coon looking like the best team in the conference. We'll talk about that Carroll tournament a little bit. You, Jeff, were down there for the Carroll game as well. They took on MVAOCOU. And, folks, I want to say this because I think Mason's mentioned this to Jeff, too. Jeff will say Odebolt, Battle Creek, Ida Grove.
OABCIG, Odebolt, Arthur, Battle Creek, Ida Grove, Maple Valley, Anthonoto, Charter Oak Ute. Yes.
Well, everybody else says OABCIG and MVAOCOU. Jeff Blankman's the only person that I know that fully says it out every single time.
We had this conversation the other day, and Jeff looks at me and goes, well, I'm old enough that I played every single one of those schools when they were separate.
I played Mapleton. I played Anthonoto. I played Charter Oak. I played Ute. And then I played Charter Oak and Ute together, and I played Maple Valley and Tenodo together. The only one I didn't play is because they combined here recently, of course, was MVAOCOU. So it's pretty easy for me to have that slide off my tongue. Yeah.
But they played took on Carroll. Carroll ended up beating them 10-8, a really nice win for the Tigers to open up that tournament. A team that's played really good outside of conference, but dropped a couple of close games last night, too. And I think a team that's starting to turn the corner a little bit and plays a pretty good baseball.
Yeah, Carroll sitting 4-11. That was a nice win. They had a good come from behind to win against Newell Fonda last week as well. Just in that Raccoon River Conference, it's such a tough conference. They're going to get some wins in it. They are. They'll get some wins in that league at some point here this year. But just that they've been kind of snake bitten in that league here so far this season. So.
Yeah, and you look at the competition Carroll's played over the years in the Raccoon River Conference, because now with them moving to the Hawkeye Tent next year, it may be different for baseball and softball. But, you know, this kind of last year, you look at the competition they've played, and there's been plenty of Division I kids that have come out of the Raccoon River. I mean, I only know by name one of them because I watched him pitch one time in person, and probably the fastest pitcher I've seen pitch in person, kid over from Winterset, Justin Hackett. But, I mean, elite competition when it comes to the Raccoon River. Yep. So you look at 4-11, you're like, Carroll's way under 500, but you're playing the North Polks, the Bondurants, the Ballards. I mean, you're playing good competition each week.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dallin Crandall gave them a heck of a start the other day in that win over MBOCOU. I wish that the weather would have been nice enough that they could have gotten the third place in the championship games in on Saturday. But the Coons-Saydell game had a lightning delay in there, and then it downpoured pretty hard, you know, not for very long, but downpoured pretty good a couple of different times as they tried to finish that game. I know the field was starting to get to that point where, you know, is it too wet to keep going for safety reasons and stuff? You know, the dirt part of the field looked like it was manageable. Whether or not the grass was questionable probably by the end. The biggest thing on Saturday was there was another storm that was scheduled to come through about 6 and did. So I kind of said something to somebody before, you know, they even called it off. I'm like, if they play the third place game, it's not going to get done until probably 8:30, 9 o'clock at the earliest, because you're going to have another lightning delay and storm delay in here, and then you're going to have to, you know, kind of rework the field and get the wet spots, you know, fixed and everything. So by the time that game, because it was 5:15 when the second game of the day finished, you know, you were looking at probably not getting that game started until about 6 when the rain was going to come through. So it was probably closer to 7:30 by the time you'd have started that third place game. So you were looking at a 9:30, 10 o'clock if you were lucky to get the championship game in. So they got all the coaches together, Randy Beeson and the AD and the field guy here in town for Merchants Park. They were all down there and discussed it. They decided to go ahead and call it. But, you know, at the same time, you think about it, you had four teams come in. All four teams got one game in.
Yep.
So I think they were all pretty happy to have gotten that one game in. So
the other team here in town picked up two wins last night as well. Yep. Kemper went 2-0 against Atlantic. I had the first game, and then the second game, kind of Kemper poured it on him a little bit. 15-6, I think, was the final in that one. And they're playing great baseball right now.
They
moved
are.
Up to like 12 or 11.
12 or 13th
or
whatever.
Somewhere right
there
in the Iowa Baseball Coaches Association poll, but playing some really good baseball here, sitting out at 15-3.
Yeah, getting some good pitching, getting some timely hitting. The defense at times has been really good, and at times
I will
it's
say in the
been
first
a struggle
game,
for him.
The first game last night, it was really good, because I talked to Coach Bach after the game, and I go, you know, you go from giving up 8 errors against Algona to having none in that first game, and he goes, it was a night and day difference.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the area where they probably needed to improve. Every time I talk with Riley, you know, and stuff, they talk about having to get better defensively. And I remember saying something early in the season that Kemper had kind of a history of struggling a little bit defensively, you know, early in the season, and then getting better, you know, and cutting down on those, you know, error numbers as the season gone on. And hopefully last night will be a start and a turn for them to, you know, to start playing the type of defense, because they're finding ways to win games. It's not always probably what you would call pretty at times when you have 4 or 5 errors and you're giving up some unearned runs and stuff, and then you're having to, you know, make that up on the offensive end. But they've been able to do that, and they've got some guys hitting the ball really well right now.
Yeah, and I know I did the Kemper trainer game to open up the year right before state track, and the funny thing I said about that is I go, Kemper last year averaged 2 errors a game. I go, if Kemper can stay around 2, they will be a solid team. And I'm like, you know, that the games that they're going to have more, they're going to struggle. The games that they have less, they're going to look really good. And so I did that trainer game. They had five in that game and had to come from behind and win. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of what I saw. And I think that's kind of the story of the season for them so far. If they're above that, you know, 2, 3, 4 error mark, it's been a really tough game that they've been playing. But if they're at 0 or 1 or 2, then they're a really good team, and they're a hard team to beat.
Yeah, they're going to make some noise in the playoffs.
I think so, too.
So this is probably, and I think it surprises some people because of what they graduated last year, and they're so young this year, but I think this might be one of the better Kemper teams we've seen in the last few seasons. So, and I think they're gonna be a tough out. I want to bounce back to softball here real quick because a really bad loss in a way for Glenn Ralston last night over at Woodbine. You go over there with a chance to kind of take complete control of the Rolling Valley. You'd really been dominant all year long against teams in that conference. You know, you're sitting there with no losses going in. You know, Woodbine has the one loss. Boyer Valley has the one loss, and that was to you. And you beat them by 10 the first time. You got a chance to put Woodbine 2 games behind you in the league. Now, all of a sudden, you get beat. And, you know, you and Boyer Valley are both 3-1. Woodbine sitting there at, I think, 2-1 or 3-1 in the leagues. Now, all of a sudden, you're in a fight, you know, to win a conference that you looked like you were 100% in control. And that's a good Glidden team. So I was just kind of surprised that they went over and were not able to get that win last night.
Yeah, and the big thing for me is I know I did their postseason game last year, and Coach Bergmeyer comes over and goes, we're hoping that, you know, Woodbine becomes less of a problem with Charlie Pryor leaving, because Woodbine was elite with Charlie Pryor last year. And now you go over there and they were a below 500 team when it came to normal record, obviously 2-1 in conference record. And, you know, this was your year to beat them. I mean, you go over there and you're like, this is the year that we can go over there, beat Woodbine. We can kind of be the top dog of the Rolling Valley. And to lose that one, you know, maybe that's, you kind of said it with Exira last night, not in the sense of losing, but maybe that's their wake-up call of, you know, we can beat up on some pretty good teams sometimes and play some really good ball, but, you know, we just can't have that big gap between our best game and our worst game. You kind of got to get a better average of, you know, if we're going to play bad, we're still able to win, like kind of what Exira has. We play bad, we're going to win, but at the same time, we're going to learn from it.
It'll be interesting to talk to Coach Bergmeyer with our weekly interview this week and find out maybe from him what actually happens. I think Woodbine's better than their record had indicated. They were really young. I think they've got one really good pitcher over there that's young, but is going to be really, really good. So I want to run through here because I know we're running low on time. Don't want to forget any of the teams here real quick. IK Manning softball sitting 9-7 right now. They have won 2 in a row. They're better than their record indicates, too, because we talked about how good the WIC is. All of their losses this year are to ranked teams. But they finally last week against Griswold got a win against a team above 500, and I think that was something that they really needed to do to be able to kind of prove, you know, how good they're playing. Coon Rapids Bears sitting 4-6, but they're 3-2 in their last 5 games. ESAC County fell to 3-3 last night, but hitting the ball well, just got to get consistent. Last night, 9 errors, gave up 10 unearned runs to lose to number 6 Newell Fonda 13-8. So that was a game that maybe they let slip through their fingertips. Carroll sitting at 1-15 could have earned their second win of the season. They were a leading Maple Valley Anthonoto Charter Oak Ute at the tournament over at OABCIG on Saturday when it got rained out. They're now going to play those girls coming up. I think it's this Thursday, if memory serves me correct. So that's going to be a new game on their schedule. Arweva still searching for their first win of the year. They're sitting 0-8. Congrats to South Central Calhoun and Coach Bunt. They got their first win last week, outscoring West Bend Mallard 17-10. And then over on the baseball diamonds, Arweva not having a lot of games in, kind of similar to the ESAC softball team. They're sitting 3-4, but got a really nice win over a pretty good Boyer Valley team last night on the road. Audubon gets a nice win over Tri-Center last night in baseball to move to 3-10 on the year. They're starting to play a little bit better here as well. ESAC County had won 2 in a row, and then they kind of give a game away. They were up 8-6 late, and they get tied 8-8 and then lose to Newell Fonda 10-8 last night in 8 innings. So a tough one for them. Glidden Ralston ends up falling last night. They're 4-8 on the year, but they're 3-1-3 of their last 5 games. And Ikea Manning also sitting at 5-9, but they've won 2 of 3. And Randy Snyder and South Central Calhoun picked up their third win last night to move it to 3-6, but a nice win against Alta Aurelia. So we got some baseball teams starting to come on here maybe a little bit here to the midpoint, to the two-thirds of the way through the season.
And that will wrap up KCIM Sports Rewind for this Tuesday. Check out a podcast in just moments.
As the athletes at your house prepare for hard work and fun of the season, remember that St. Anthony Rehab Services provides physical therapy for any sports injury that may sideline your member of the team. Sports injuries can plague kids of all ages and keep them from playing the sport they love. Athletes will be under the direct supervision of a certified and licensed healthcare professional in the newly renovated sports performance facility. If an injury is keeping your athlete out of the game,
Western Iowa's news and classic hit station is 1380 AM, 95.1 FM, KCI.